Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Greetings, Podfellows. Ben Shires here, ushering you into 2013 with this, our last Dave Weekly of the current series. It's not a time for sadness, though, but one of rejoicing, as we've trawled through our archives to bring you a fine selection of outtakes that, purely for reasons of quality, were dropped from the original episodes. I mean, if anything, they were deemed too good. That's right, they're that damn explosive. So go fetch your Ouija board and your divining rod as we talk Derek Acora with Angelos Epithemou. One of the key issues which we touched upon, and I know you like to touch upon, is your love of Twitter and the people that you like to interact with on there.
Yes.
You were well into medium spiritualist...
Derek Acora.
Derek Acora.
That's right, last time, yes.
How has your relationship with Derek blossomed?
Well, I wanted Derek Acora to come on my show.
There was issues.
They wouldn't let me have him because, you know, they thought he's mad.
Were they worried that he might be able to channel too many spirits of...
Yeah, well, because there's a live audience there. Mm. So, you know, you don't want his brain getting bunged up with all the spirits that are hanging around these people.
Well, that's
so
true.
So they said no to him. But now on Twitter, only last night, actually, I was talking to Piers Morgans, I was talking to David Icke, and I was talking to the Dalai Lama.
That's a dinner party right there,
bad,
isn't it?
So, because I was just having a think, and I thought, I wonder who can answer this question and what he thinks about this. And so I just, like, chimed up to the Dalai Lama, and I said, look, I don't know what time it is over there at the moment, but are you a Haagen-Dazs or a Wall's bloke? You know, what is your favourite? And he hasn't got back to me yet, but...
That's a thinker, though, that question. He's probably
philosophy.
Meditating on it, isn't he?
He's probably thinking about it. You know, what do I like? And then Piers Morgan, I asked him if he paid guests to go on his show, and if he did, then I'm well up for it. You know, so I've said basically, come and get me.
Yeah.
You know where to find me. And David Icke, I was watching The Shop. Have you seen that on ITV?
No, I've not seen
The
that.
The Store, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's late night. It's rubbish. It's like where they just sell things to you.
Oh,
like,
brilliant.
And they had the pillow on there, like £24.98 or something. And I just thought, oh, I wonder if David Icke's ever seen The Store, and would he be interested in buying a pillow, or does he think it's a waste of money?
Yeah.
But he hasn't got back to me either.
Well, you've got to target people whose judgment you can trust.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
David Icke, if you can see through the flimsy facade of most of the world's hierarchy being lizards, you know a good pillow when you rest on
you
one.
You know if you want to spend £24.98 on a hard pillow.
Absolutely. The one thing that
I would value what he says, you know, like his opinion on it.
I mean, what's your take on his lizard monarchy theory? You go along with it?
Yeah. Well, who wouldn't? You know, they said, of course it's true. You know, if you think about it long enough, right? Have you ever watched this thing on YouTube? The Lion Sleeps No More. Have you ever watched it?
Is that sounds like a song from The Lion King.
Yeah, I know, but it isn't. It's where he talks to you for like 9 hours.
Okay.
And most people, you know, can only manage about 2.5-3 hours of it. I've watched a lot. And believe me, the more you watch it, the more you get... like, yeah, this is like, you know, this is a good idea. I think it's 9 hours long, so that you can turn it on like when you go to sleep and then just nod off to it, and so it all just seeps into your brain for 9 hours, and you wake up and you think, I I think I'm a changed person, you know, because you've got all this new information, you know, you can take it all in your sleep.
Well, it's good, because when you get to that level that you're now at, sort of mingling with showbiz types, a lot of them, according to David Icke, are the lizards. So you need to know who
it's bloodlines.
Who's who.
It's bloodlines, yeah. You don't want to be talking to someone and going, you know, hello, I think you're shape-shifting in front of me. You know, I can now spot that. Because I've seen it on YouTube. There's loads of it on YouTube.
Pete Burns, he's a...
No, he's not a shapeshifter.
Is he not?
No, he's got. He's just...
He's a face melter.
No, he's just a... he's got loads of plastic surgery. Oh. That's what he's done to himself.
I think...
It's up to him.
The way to spot them is to look at people's heating bills, because lizards are notoriously cold-blooded. So that's anyone who's got like a high heating bill must be having to compensate.
Well, the thing is, though, a lot of these rich people... have got money to burn.
Yeah.
So they can just have the eating on the whole time.
Maybe they're literally burning money to keep warm.
Well, no, I don't think so. But they would just have the heating up really high, or maybe spend a lot of the time in a sauna. Which they'll all have saunas.
Either that, or they're cultivating cannabis. We'll never know.
Cultivating cannabis?
Well,
that's... like the drugs.
Yeah, you need a high electricity bill for that.
Do you?
Yeah. It's all the lighting.
You're lying.
Not that I know.
This is
turning incriminating.
No, you're all right. No one gives a shit.
Our next clip takes us back to July and the Greenwich Comedy Festival, where we caught up with the notorious DOD, that's David O'Doherty to you, and his assault on the Irish charts. So, we've done the nominee, you've got loads of awards, you've been on loads of TV shows, TV panel shows, you reached number 30 in the Irish pop charts.
Yeah,
you did that.
I tried to get a song to number 27. It was a project with a guy called John Carney, who's an amazing film director at home, who made Once.
Good the movie film. And doing great on Broadway now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Just won all the Tonys. It won an Oscar then last year or the year before last. Well, anyway, he and I made some really weird documentaries at home where I set out to achieve something. And one week I tried to get a song to 27 in the Irish charts by burning, with strategic buying. Because you have to find out what shops count for chart tracker in a given week. I think it's harder to do now because there's more download stuff. But then we burned the CDs on three laptops. We burned like 300 of them. Yeah. And with strategic buying at the correct times.
Is this how One Direction do it? Or
we,
is it?
We definitely, we got into the charts. We got into number 30. So I will have that for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's impressive. If charts, nothing else.
Yeah, mid-chart ranker. That's a hit. I think that is a hit. Isn't
it?
30 is a hit.
Definitely. I mean, if you go back to my sort of musical beginnings, when now that's what I call whatever was still, you know, songs that had hit number 50 were getting songs that you'd never heard of, like a Chakademus and Pliers B-side.
Yeah.
You mean, I've never heard this song in my life, but someone's deigned it worthy of putting on a compilation.
Well, it's a terrible song. Or wasn't it? It was a song called Orange about ladies with too much fake tan. And it, it's nice because I think if it had been a high ranking one, a higher ranking song, it might have sort of followed me around for the rest of my life and people would be like, do your novelty song. Whereas people have, it's generally just passed into the glorious mists of time.
Now,
we made a terrible video for it that people might like to look at, where I'm in a white suit by the beach. Actually, we couldn't find a white suit and we certainly couldn't afford to buy one on the budget. So I'm wearing a white lab coat. We've cut the bottom off.
Well, to a scientist, that's a suit, David. So that's fine. That's their smarts. Well, that was David O'Doherty at the Greenwich Comedy Festival. Next up, we found ourselves at the Edinburgh Comedy Festival, the Big Daddy. Oh, yeah, we were comedy sluts this year, talking to Alex Horn about nominative determinism. You have a minor qualification in instrumentation.
Well, grade 3, French horn. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah,
I've not improved on that. Actually, I got grade 2 this year.
Really? So you've gone down
so
a second.
Down. Well, I thought I'd do it again. Confirm that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Better to be safe than sorry.
Mm.
And obviously, I mean, people might notice that the it shares a coincidence with your name, French horn, Alex Horn.
And my middle name, Section.
Yeah.
So,
I mean... I mean, is the nominative determinism going on there?
No. What it is, this is good, I know this, it's an aptonym, which is different. So nominative determinism means that what you're born in, what your name is, you're destined to end up in that profession. Whereas aptonym is just a name that is appropriate later.
Oh, okay.
There's a famous hurdler called Stepanova. And everyone thought that was a nominative determinant, but that's actually a married name. So she became that after she was a hurdler. So that's an aptonym. I don't think I was destined to host the horn section, but it's appropriate. What's your surname?
Shires.
Ah, so that's not right.
Yeah. I've done very little agriculture and haven't appeared in any Lord of the Rings films.
No, so I was thinking like a comparative of shy, more shy.
Oh, right, I'm a real wallflower, actually, You just try and get me to stop being a corner stander.
Yeah.
I don't think it's had any bearing, my name and my life, apart from, I guess, I'm from Yorkshire. I think that's something that people are like, but that was inevitable. I was always going to be brought up there, and my surname was always going to be that. That's literally just coincidence.
Mm. Usain Bolt's quite a good one. That's a nominative determinism example.
Exactly, and the fact that people are now sort of starting to say lightning strikes twice.
Yeah, Lineker
and
did that,
things like that.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people could he be an experiment from journalists to create headlines?
Yes, about 50-50 chance.
Yeah,
that
definitely
being the case.
I mean, we don't want to say for certain that Jamaica is actually just a laboratory set up.
Not for certain.
Yeah.
But I've heard it is.
Yeah. There's rumours flying around.
Yeah.
Clip 4 features Flight of the Conchords Rhys Darby, who transported us from the Dave Studios via the conduit of his own voice to his native New Zealand.
What's the cinema setup like in New Zealand? Because I imagine it's... Is it still quite...
Well,
like
usual
nice
barn, you know, barn with hay bales, and we just get whatever came out.
Project
in the late
that onto
70s.
A cow.
Yeah, yeah.
Make the cow stay still.
Yeah, we try and get Frisian cows.
Mm.
Yeah, so we get a bit of visual display of what's going
All
on.
All films are in black and white, then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
nice.
Same as over here. You know, fairly similar. Have you been down to New Zealand?
I've heard stories of people who've been down there.
It's like Australia, only nicer.
Yeah. I'd love to go.
We've got sort of British weather, but we've got mountains and gullies, and it's pretty fantastic.
My friend visited.
Great food.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Lovely lamb.
Mm.
I'll bet.
Well, it's not the only thing we eat. In fact, we don't eat much of that.
But, send it to us.
Yeah.
My friend went, and his cousin is a police officer in New Zealand.
Oh, watch out.
I know, exactly. The long arm of
Here
the law down there.
Here we go.
And so he was sort of, he said, I've always wanted to drive in a police car where the siren's been on. And obviously he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Let's do that. There's no crime.
He just put
the siren on. They were whizzing through. And he was travelling with another mate who was sat in the back. Made the mistake of picking up the policeman's camera. He's also like a crime scene investigator.
He
was flicking through full of dead bodies.
Oh,
and he just yelped from the back. And he's like, oh, my God, why would you have this with you? Why is this not in a box somewhere where people can't look at it?
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah.
So who are all these dead bodies? We've only had about 3 murders in the last few years. He's got the full collection still on the camera.
He's the man who's called to every crime scene.
He's the one.
You're on the other side of the country. I'm afraid you're going to have to make it.
Yeah, that'll be Keith. Yeah, he's the guy that he shoots the dead bodies. He's been doing that since the 60s.
Yeah, he trains the cows for the cinema as well. He's a jack of all trades.
Only one man can take a photo of a stiff. That's Keith. Get him in here. Put it on focus.
He comes with his own makeup set.
Yeah,
just make him look more alive, Keith. Yeah.
Put his legs slightly askew. Make it look like he's fallen.
Okay, we've reached about the midsection now. It feels just about right for a musical interlude, and who better to deliver that than show favourites Abandaman. Now, the context backing up this song is that we've been having a chat about how Irish rap had flourished in the wake of the economic downturn in Ireland. I guess a simple formula for that would be when things go crap, turn to rap. Anyway, here's Rob's take on it and Abandaman. Right, so obviously, I think this is going to be a very easy subject to lend itself to a rap. How the Irish rap scene mushroom clouded with the economic crisis and how it's helping to solve that. Can you sum it up somehow?
I'm not sure. So we're going to do a little freestyle. This is about the supposed link between Irish hip-hop and the economy. Indeed, how Irish hip-hop could solve the economy. Yep. Okay, like Pied Piper said, follow me. This is Irish hip-hop trying to swallow the hole in the economy. You see, man, before times they were hyper. Yep, we were rich guys, Celtic Tiger. Now the night turns day a little darker and times a little harder. Money spent on lager. People are poor. People on a stroll to the queue for the dole. Money, it's a hole in the pocket. So logic says we're not lost. Who will save the day? I said it's hip-hop. Yeah, you know the money will truly bang. We got to follow maybe the crew, the Wu-Tang Clan. You see, yo, Irish people, if like we scared, look at what they started. I'm talking about Wu-Wear. We come out prepared. What we got to do is be hella great. Let's revive the economy with mixtapes. Yeah, I said, man, you know, let's do that. Cause inside Ireland lies an Irish Tupac. Times are leaner and times are harder. The next B.I.G. used to be a farmer, but he got fired, he got retired, and now we ain't got no job, no tractor. So he said, fuck this, I'll be a rapper. That's how we did it, you see, we got a voice. Everyone's a rapper cause we're kinda unemployed. So yeah, that's right, the reason that we grabbed the mic. You know we making like magic, right? Yep, it's what we just do. And man, jobs, screw them, we with the Irish Wu-Tang.
Next up sees us back in Edinburgh with Richard Herring, who was up there talking cock. Therefore, we were talking censorship.
It's interesting you should say that, because you've faced censorship issues in Edinburgh this year, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I did, which I didn't. In 2002, there was not, you know, the poster was everywhere. It was in
darker
the
darker times, though, Rich.
Well, it is weird. I mean, again, I think, you know, so there is this feeling that is a little bit weird, that a prudishness has come in. It's mainly, the things they've censored in the Fringe programme are mainly about penises. The word vagina is on my poster, and that's not been censored.
What I thought was quite interesting, because your cock has had the vowel taken out of it, as has Stuart Goldsmith's prick.
Yeah.
But with his, it's an exclamation mark that they've substituted, which is just an eye upside down. So it was going to take someone who's quite illiterate to not just see that word.
An asterisk is essentially a circle. It draws attention to the fact that those words have a rude meaning. Both of them have many, many non-rude meanings. So it seems to me a weird thing to censor it, because if anybody who doesn't know it has a rude meaning, which I presume would be some little children, will now go, why has that got an asterisk in it? It must be a rude thing. So all you're doing is drawing, you know, all like Edinburgh Council and the Edinburgh Fringe guy are doing is perverting young children, I think, into finding out about rude words.
If you didn't know that word and you thought, well, I'll Google exactly what it says on that poster, you're not going to not come up with the word that it's referring
to. No. So, you know, it's a bit odd. And, you know, again, at an arts festival, you would hope that people were allowed to express themselves, certainly in things like that. You know, I did a show called Oh Fuck, I'm 40, which I didn't, I never thought, well, I'll have that printed everywhere. I took the vowel out of it and replaced it with a slice of cake. You're not expecting that not to get censored, but it's sort of really odd if someone's making a decision about, and they said they wouldn't censor plays, they wouldn't censor A Prick Up Your Ears by Joe Orton, they wouldn't censor the title of that because it's a play. So someone's there making an artistic decision that Joe Orton is somehow more worthy than Stuart Goldsmith or me, you know. So, and that's not the job of someone in an office to decide. You know, Talking Cock could be the most beautiful lyrical piece of art that's ever, in poetry that's ever, and you know, they haven't seen it, so they don't know.
That's
it
a direct quote.
It isn't. Well, I did write in 2002, because again, in 2002, kind of The Guardian wrote an article sort of slagging off this propensity towards crudity in titles and stuff, and the Fringe going downhill 10 years ago. And I said, I wrote and said, you haven't seen the show, it could be the most beautiful piece of theatre ever produced, which I did, so I could take the most beautiful piece of theatre ever produced out and put that as a quote in The Guardian. I didn't say I'd written it. But it's slightly worrying, but you know, you can. I think it kind of all boils down a bit to last year. One of the acts put like little graphics of spunking penises on everyone else's posters, and I think they got into some trouble. So they've kind of come back a bit heavy-handed and made themselves look a bit stupid, I think, because they haven't done it across the board. You know, they've made odd decisions where some things are allowed and some things aren't. I mean, the word cock is censored in my title, but not in the quote underneath it where it says his cock is. So you know, they haven't even done it properly. But also, and the gang has not been censored because it's spelt with a K, and there's something called the Big Wobbly Tit Factory or stuff like that, which is much more explicitly rude. And you know, so I would say the thing is to not censor anything, or to allow people to self-censor.
You should have just spelled cock with a K. Then
I could have done. Yeah.
I mean, there's that famous. Do you know Martin Yol, the football manager? Yeah, his brothers are Dick and Cock Yol. They're real names,
because
they're just Dutch names. But I think over here they wouldn't have made it as football managers as well.
Well, you never know. I used to work for the writing the phone book in West London. And, you know, you could look through the X directory and you'd find, you know, all these, there was millions of people called Wank. There was someone called Dr. Wank, which I thought was a great, like, Bond villain. And there was someone called Mr. So, right, with a K, so you wonder why he's gone X directory, but you also wonder why he hasn't come to England and changed his name. Because if I went to, you know, a foreign country and they said, oh, in our culture, the word herring is the most explicitly rude word that we have, except it's also like it's a cheeky Australian nickname, I'd have said, you know, I'll change my name to something else. Or I'll, you know, so it's kind of odd that. But yeah, but you know, that's...
There was that famous car, was it? I can't remember what it was. Is it like a Pinto or something that they launched in Mexico and they couldn't realise it wasn't selling? It's because it means an extremely small penis. Right. So can you imagine? Yeah, I'll go for the Pinto, please. I'm feeling great about myself. For the money's not having a midlife crisis. But I mean, I suppose some small pleasure must have been taken out of the fact that you can now say, well, the Edinburgh Fringe organisers tampered with your cock. You can
Exactly.
From talking about censorship with Richard Herring, how ironic is this? The next person coming up is Andrew Maxwell, who was a brilliant guest. The clip that we wanted to put in for this outtake section has actually been censored by our own legal team. It was deemed too hot to handle for even the Dave Weekly Outtakes podcast. So instead, here's Andrew Maxwell talking about his little voices that he does. Also very good, just not quite as controversial. You're really good at accent.
You can do a Burnley. You can do Burnley. Yeah, you can do accents, you can do, you know.
That's how I was really surprised about that. I think that's one of the things where often when people are good at accents, they use them a lot. But you just kind of throw them out there very sparingly and you're like, hang on.
Yeah, yeah.
He's pretty good at that.
Well, I've always slightly despaired of the impersonator who went, and I think that would be a little bit like... The ruffling of the hair, the comedy glasses going on, the Ted Heath impression beginning.
Yeah. You know? I always thought the real sort of misnomer of any sort of impressionist would be to think just because you can do the voice, you're immediately funny. I think you need the material to back it up.
Yeah,
which is,
yeah.
I think that's why when you do an impression, it really enhances the set because you've already got the material. It's just that you happen to be able to do
nice
a convincing accent with it as well.
Sometimes if you do it more sparingly, it leaves more room for the audience to imagine the character. You know, a couple of lines that really kind of illuminate what that sort of character might be like is enough. I mean, this year in my Edinburgh show, there was a... the character called Gay Keith, and he stole the show from me, like, but he only has like four lines. He's actually only in the show for 2.5 minutes, but like it's just a super fruity Edinburgh guy. just called the Lone Ranger. But it's just a scene of him just hung over tidy in his flat just next morning. Look at all that mess. Come on, Keith, let's go up, let's have a tidy up party. That's a Kit Kat wrapper. Who ate that? I don't even eat Kit Kats. That's a mystery. And it was just like, that's it. Like, but like just really tough Scottish men just really laughing at the idea of a fruity Scottish dude tidy in his flat. Like, I mean, that's... Because you want to, you know, there's... Anybody could imagine a gay guy on the cruise, like, on the pool, like... Anybody could imagine that, but a super fruity gay guy tidying up his flat while hungover.
So from the frivolities of Andrew Maxwell's onstage voices to much more serious discussion of acting, the fine art thereof, and what it takes to be a thespian in this modern age, it's Tim and Eric. You're great storytellers, also versatile actors. You play two versions of Tim and Eric in this movie. So is the, I mean, you trained at film school rather than as actors per se, didn't you? So was that, how did you make the leap from, you know, playing Tim and Eric the filmmakers to Tim and Eric the actors playing Tim and Eric?
You know,
I mean, I just want to say acting is easy. It's a scam. Anybody can do it.
All these
Shakespearean actors are just, they're just scamming everybody. It's the easiest thing to do. Just make it up. Just be yourself. And talk. It's so hard. So it's easy. It's not very hard for us to do.
So, yeah, I imagine that it's... sorry to insult you with a question. I don't want to put your filmmaking next to your acting because it's obviously like comparing, you know, you painting a picture to doing a doodle on a receipt or something.
I can also brush my teeth, but nobody talks about how cool that is.
Yeah.
I know it's a big part of your guys' culture is this, you know, Shakespearean thing like Tim touched on. But in America, it's like, who cares? You know, like... I mean, Johnny Depp, you know, he's just talking.
It's like a full retarded man.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
fully
I've seen
retarded, so.
Some of your greatest actors, Nick Cage. I mean, mm-hmm. he just plays Nick Cage in every film, mentally handicapped guy. You know,
and they just put words in his ear, and he says the words. Yeah. It's like so easy. Yeah. It's not respected at all. It's considered like a low form of working.
Do you know? But we have got some actors like that over here. They're pushing through now. Orlando Bloom,
Hoskins
does every. Orlando Bloom does every take, just one line, and people just say that line to him. He goes on, does it? If it's a full sentence, yeah, they have to cut that scene. That's genuine. That's actually true.
Yeah. We've seen the IQ test of Sean Connery, and that is low. You know what I'm saying? It is like it's Pitt's and we in America.
It's actually Brad Pitt's IQ.
They share it. One has it one weekend. Yeah. It's kind of custody thing. It's refreshing to hear people talk candidly about something which, let's face it, the media like to build up.
Yeah.
So you guys are kind of busting down some taboos.
Yeah, it's easy. Anybody can do it.
Yeah. I mean, but no one can make the film.
It's better, the dumber you are, the better, they say. Because you're more like a parrot. You're more like a dog that can just repeat commands.
Well, on that note, let's talk about casting. So you've got some of your great acting friends in who not really acting, just doing what they would normally be doing, but with a camera on them.
Right.
So people like Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly's in there, Jeff Goldblum pops up, Zach Galifianakis. Did you just impart that kind
all
of wisdom?
Sub-mental.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a very cute, I mean, add those IQs up, what you're getting, barely triple figures for four people.
Barely.
Barely.
It's sad, really. They should be in homes.
But, I mean, a movie set could be like a home to those people. You give them a sense of purpose. They feel like they've got a role.
It's just abusive. We feel it's abusive, you know.
So if we wanted to go to press with Tim and Eric abused Will Ferrell, is that the headline that we could use?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to get Will Ferrell on set, he's in his trailer. You have to get these little caramels that he loves, these sweet caramels. And you just... kind of coax him out of his trailer and walk him onto set. Mm. And then tell him what line to say, and he says it, and then you put a caramel on his tongue. And he...
Does he have a wrangler, like the wolf would have an animal wrangler, a handler? Does Will Ferrell and those, like, do they have people who just sort of put them back in the box? And
it's mostly, we just have a PA, and he's just got a handful of caramels. And it's like, and he doesn't even need to taste one. If he just hears the jingle of like the plat, like the you'll see him pop up.
Classic Pavlov dog syndrome.
Yeah, just the lines will start going. And
they wouldn't be aware of that kind of psychology. They just his instincts.
Yeah. I mean, we flash lights and they get all distracted and confused.
Mm.
And then we put them down at the end of the day and turn the light off and they simmer down and pretty much fall asleep after a few minutes.
I mean, it's nice. It's a human kindness
as well.
Yeah,
exactly.
You've got to give them the treats, the rewards. So after that academic breakdown of acting from Tim and Eric, let's go back now to Greenwich Comedy Festival and Mark Watson, who we caught up with right after his gig. It was about midnight and things got a bit spaced out. It's something that blows my mind. A time before there was time. You know, before the Big Bang, before anything existed.
No.
There was just no time.
No, you're going to give me the yips talking about that.
Yeah.
It's very... Isn't it?
I know.
The more you think about it, the more you think...
Yeah.
Because how could there have been anything?
Yeah, exactly. If there wasn't time, how was there time to have no time?
Exactly. There can't have been anything before the Big Bang, but there can't have not been anything either.
Yeah.
So it's actually horrible to think about.
It gives me the heebie-jeebies a bit because it makes you think, is what we're living just some other little fart in the universe, some blip, an anomaly?
Exactly. And the future's the same, isn't it? Either it goes on forever, which is sort of terrifying, or it doesn't, and that's also terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. What we crave as a race is mundanity. Mundanity and certainty, which is why we have time, Mark.
I suppose it is, yeah.
It all comes... It's a circular argument, but...
Oh, God. Let's change the subject, because this is horrible.
I know. It's not a 11:30 after a comedy festival kind of chat. Or maybe it is. All that we need is some kind of extracurricular substance, and this would be exactly what we're
going to say. If we were off our heads, this would be ideal, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, it's another cross-country jaunt now as we whiz back up to Edinburgh and meet Australian comic Jim Jefferies, who tells us all about the things that he really loves about the festival.
why would this be the first place that someone would want to build buildings? Mm. Like, it's brilliant, but, you know, surely there must have been a less wet field.
Yeah.
You know, when they just arrived, they went, this is the place. It's all muddy and slushed, like, you know, 700 years ago. They go, that's f***ing build.
Someone got lazy. Someone was like, I can't be bothered to draw any more map. Can we not just stay here for a bit? But yeah, it's an amazing place, isn't it? I think when you've been away from the country for a while and then you come back to Edinburgh during the festival, it's just a crazy time.
Well, it's also, you get used to it. I forgot how beautiful a city was or how crazy this one was. But now that I'm seeing it through my girlfriend's eyes, she's from Canada, and she's like, look at that, look at that. Give me a photo in front of this gate. And I'm there going, this is what? That's like next to a dumpster. Look how nice it is.
Yeah, we even do our rubbish well.
But we're staying up on the Royal Mile, and it's hell, to be honest with you, that little bit to stay on.
Well, just because of the flyers and
it's
everything.
It's just hard to walk from your room.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing you want meters. When you leave the hotel.
And I'm a hater of amateur acting. I hate it.
With a passion, though.
Anytime you see that little stage and there's people just yelling out, come to our show, and then one of them go, it's adventure, it's romance. Just fuck off. I hate that. I'm a big hater of sketch comedy. I like sketch comedy on television. I like it if it's done well, but I hate what it stands for.
Mm.
Name me one working class sketch comedy group.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously there's not a great deal of them out there.
There isn't one.
Yeah,
there's never been one. It's an elitist form of comedy. It really is.
But I mean, The Fringe, it brings it all together, and at least it's an easy place for you to then direct your hate all at once.
Yes. Well, I don't hate on stage about those people. More power to them.
Yeah. Just in the broadcast medium.
This is no one's listening to this, are they?
Yeah, no, we definitely don't have a listenership in the tens of thousands.
I am ripping on the rich while I'm talking to a guy in a cravat.
But yeah, this is all obviously this is earned. This is not something I grew up in extreme poverty.
Oh,
and
of course
I had to steal all this from. Well, the last clip, and therefore the last output of the Dave Weekly Series 2, comes from one of our series favourites, David O'Doherty, talking about his pet detective agency. Now, if you have some kind of query, I don't know if he's still taking on cases, but it's worth a shot. All righty then. When you were about 9 or so, you had your own pet detective agency.
It's true, I did. Yeah, with my friend. I had to phone, because I had the most grown-up voice, I had to phone up an old lady. This is how short-lived it was. And tell her that we were going to take on her case then. And which is so cruel, because obviously she would have thought we were ringing to tell her that we'd found her cat. But rather, some children. Do you know, we also called down to the local police station to ask them if they had any spare cases. We're 3 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
And this is a terrible time in Irish history when various dodgy things are going on. And now kids are going, we're going to fight the crime right here. We're going to deal with this, coppers.
Yeah, well, thank God that someone stepped in at that difficult time. Do you know what, though? It struck me that you predated Ace Ventura by a good decade as well, didn't you? Have you ever thought about raising a grievance with that?
Yeah, that's very true. Also, I had a mask, and when I put it on, I performed extravagant dancing, stopped traffic, and got off with Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
So it's basically all of Carrie's work. That other time I had a part of my memory erased.
Oh, that's inconvenient.
Yeah, some Eternal Sunshine.
And you know that all this is just being filmed for your life, which is being beamed throughout the world as we speak.
What was that? No, that wasn't EdTV. What was that one called?
It's Truman Show.
Truman Show.
A good film as well.
Which was the same time as EdTV. It was one of those situations where maybe the two producers had sort of factioned off early in the process. Same with Ants and A Bug's Life, which I think that's actually what happened there. I think they were both working on the film, and one said it should go one direction and the other said,
Yeah. Now, it's interesting when that happens. About 10, 12 years ago, there was loads of disaster films all about the end of the world. There was Armageddon and...
Sure, yeah.
And Deep around Impact.
Around the same time as Jaws, there was one called Huge Shark. See how bad at lying I am.
Get him on the TV.
I've learned nothing. Huge Shark. You've not seen Huge Shark.
Well, there you have it. That was the last outtake and therefore the last bit of the Dave Weekly Series 2. Finito, over, done. I hope you've enjoyed as much as we have. We've blooming loved it. That's why we had so many goddamn outtakes, for goodness sake. And don't worry, because the fun's not over yet. Not on your Nelly. We'll be back in February at Dave's Leicester Comedy Festival, bringing you all the fun and goodness from the fest right to your ears. Until then, you know the drill. We're on the iTunes, we're on the Twitters. I'm on there too. Come find us, say hello. Toodles doodles. The Dave Weekly is a Pixiu production for Dave, hosted by me, Ben Shires, and produced by Joel Porter.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugs your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.